Our guest has arrived.
We have Hello. Marcus here. He pops in every month to tell us about what's going on with wine. Was it not every month? It's about every 6 weeks or so, isn't it, actually? It's not even a month.
No, I think it's about every 4 weeks.
Is it about every month? Yeah, okay. Yeah. So last time you were here, it was actually, no, you're right, it was a month, because last time you were here, it was Valentine's Day and pancake, wasn't it? That was what we talked about.
Yes.
This time, we're going to look ahead to Easter.
To Easter. And what do people eat at Easter?
Traditionally, lamb, yeah.
Yeah, it's the thing. And, of course, if you're going to eat roast lamb, then a really good idea would be to go for a red wine from, say, Bordeaux or Rhone, if you like your French wines.
Okay.
Do you like your French wines, Lottie?
I think so.
Good. You're not sure? Meaning, when you get into the supermarket, you look at the or a wine shop. Hopefully you go to wine shops as well and not just supermarkets. But either way, you look at the wall that says France and you feel confused. Because it doesn't say Cabernet Sauvignon or, you know, Shiraz.
Yeah, where are the key words?
Yeah, so you've got to know your areas a little bit. So Bordeaux is Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot if it's red, and a few other grape varieties. But once you know that, and if you know you like Cabernet Sauvignon, then you can say, okay, I'm going to be, or if you know you like Merlot, I'm going to be happy in Bordeaux.
Yeah.
And over at Rhone, there's quite a wide variety of grape varieties, but Syrah or Shiraz. Did you know they're the same?
No.
Yeah. So the French just call Shiraz Syrah, or rather the Australians call Syrah Shiraz, whichever way round you. I suppose Syrah's the original name. So the Rhone is a whole wonderful area for Syrah, which is a really spicy grape, but it's also got loads of Grenache. And they mix it with the Grenache and the Syrah and another one called Mourvèdre. That's in the south. But up in the north, it's all just Syrah. So I would say a Bordeaux or a Rhone would go very well with lamb. But the thing is, people do find French wine a bit tart. Do you find that sometimes? A bit sharp and a bit sort of, you know, you don't know. But
anyway. I don't know, because it's only ever handed over to me in a glass.
Well, let's try
some. I just say thank you?
Let's try some. Okay.
This is what good. We'll I haven't had any breakfast. Have you, Tim?
Well, I have a little.
I have, but I'm not drinking any, am
oh
I?
My
so
goodness.
It's all right.
I have a little bit of food with me if you're hungry.
Oh, what's
but
that?
The purpose of this is beef slices.
Oh, right, okay.
Okay. The purpose of this is to see the effect of drinking French wine with food. It's quite different from when you're drinking it alone. So what I'm opening at the moment, it comes from Cambridge Wine Merchants. It's Crow's Hermitage, which is from the Northern Rhone. So this is a Syrah. It's by a producer called Ferreton Père et Fils, and it's about $12.99. And we're going to compare it with a Bordeaux that's also $12.99. So we're going to stick at the same price range and make it as fair a fight as we possibly can. All right, so this is going to be a bit sort of... you expect when you drink Syrah a kind of a bit of spiciness.
Because as I said, it's on red wine.
It's a peppery grape. But... Have a little sniff of that. Yeah, put your nose in first. Do you get a little bit of the pepperiness from the grape?
Yeah, I can.
And it's kind of black fruits there, blackberry underneath that pepperiness, all that kind of stuff. Now, this is an award winner. This was voted the best Crow's Hermitage at the International Wine Challenge. So you expect a lot from it. I'm not sure that it delivers everything you expect given that wonderful accolade, but we'll see. So let's give it a nice little taste. Tim can talk while we're tasting. Give us a running commentary on what you see.
Yeah, okay. Well, I don't know much about wine, but do you find that red wines vary in colour? Some are lighter than others? Because that seems quite a dark wine to me.
Yes, they absolutely do vary. And, of course, one of the lightest would be Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
And that's very pale. It doesn't have as thick a skin, and so they don't get as much colour out of it. But this is deep and Syrah. And what did you think, Lottie?
I really, really like it.
Oh, oh, dear.
Well, that's good.
Bottoms up.
It is savoury, though, isn't it? It's got a kind of a savoury bit. If you want to take a bit of
I would love to have some beef, thank you.
And chomp down on the beef. It's quite interesting what happens when you combine... I don't know what the effect with this particular wine will be, but when you combine food with...
Well, this is perfect, because when I was smelling it, it just made me think of Sunday roast dinner. And now I've got some beef. Well, this is great. They go lovely together.
Completed now. Yeah, definitely.
Mm. What may happen is if you felt the tannins, combining it with beef, those tannins would soften. And also, if it was savoury, sometimes it gets more fruity. I'm not getting it so much on that one, but sometimes the effect can be very pronounced. You get a really savoury wine suddenly starts to go fruity when you combine it with food. And people say, you know, oh, French wines, you know, or Italian wines are sharp. We're used to our lovely ripe Chilean wines and things like that, Australian wines. And the answer is to, if you eat them with food, they go fruitier. Did you experience that? Or
yes.
You did? Oh,
yeah,
good.
I did. Quick question.
Yeah.
It's kind of always the basic thing is said, white wine chilled, red wine warm. We're drinking it cold. Pretty cold, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And I really like it. Is that a problem?
Actually, that's a really interesting point, because when that rule was kind of discovered or developed, it was well before central heating. So room temperature was not the temperature of our rooms today.
Ah.
It was always pulled out of a cellar, which was a lot colder than the room, and brought to room temperature in like a Downton Abbey type room, not near the fire, away from the fire. So the temperature in the room would have been a good few degrees cooler than today's. So this obviously has been in the car, because I've been bringing it along in the car, and so it is a bit cooler. But yes, in fact, this is perhaps a little... This is perhaps close to what you would imagine the kitchen in Downton Abbey to be, temperature-wise. And white wine, you do serve cooler, but again, this was in the day before fridges. And so we tend to over-chill our white wines quite often. If you drink it straight out of the fridge, that's going to have lost quite a lot of its fruitiness. You want to bring it out of the fridge for 10 to 15 minutes before you start to drink it, I think.
Well, that's interesting.
So a lot of people put wine in the freezer and then take it out straight away, so it's really cold. So that's not really necessarily the right thing to do then.
Oh, well, you can put it in the freezer if you like, you know, your guests are coming, it's half an hour before they're coming and you forgot to chill it.
Mm.
And you know putting it in the fridge for half an hour is not going to do the job.
Yeah.
And so all you're going to do, that's just quick chill.
Mm.
It won't be colder because it's in the freezer, unless you've left it to freeze.
Well, yes, that would be a disaster.
Don't let it smash. That seems to happen in our flat quite a lot.
You leave the bottles to freeze?
The bottle's been forgotten about and left in the freezer.
Well, you know there is an answer to this. Because what you've got to do is you've got to have something in the freezer you can forget about. And the answer is these chiller sleeves, these gel chiller sleeves.
We have those.
You put them in the freezer, forget about them, and then you know when you want to chill your wine, just grab one out, put it over the bottle, and in 10 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes, that would have done the job.
They're perfect as well. They're quite cheap too, aren't you?
£10 on Amazon, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good solution. Okay, so what about... Oh, yes, tomorrow's Cambridge News has got a recipe for lamb in it that comes from the new MasterChef cookbook.
Okay.
So Greg Wallace, he's got a few... I love his... You know, he gets so enthusiastic about food, doesn't he? I love his little tips when he sort of says... I mean, I don't know, I would do this one. Do you like anchovies?
Yes.
No.
There's a real love them or hate them relationship with anchovies. And I hate it when chefs always say, and Greg's gone and done it here, you know, oh, try this. You won't notice that it's anchovy. Jamie Oliver's always saying it. But Greg Wallace says, put anchovies over the lamb before roasting and they'll melt and they'll go away. You won't notice you've got them.
Makes it salty.
And yeah, it just makes the lamb taste amazing, he says. And John Turode's got a tip for roast potatoes. I love the way that chefs argue about the best way to make
roast potatoes. Yeah, they all have their own opinion, don't they?
Jean-Christophe Novelli told me, because I used to interview people, you remember, interview celebrities, and he told me the thing to do with roast potatoes is not peel them. No, he didn't. Yeah. No, what did he say? Not wash them. You peel them. But, oh, that's right, not wash them. And not boil them. That's the thing. People parboil, right?
Okay.
Just let the roast potatoes go in their own thing. Because if you boil them, then they can go a little bit too soft, a bit risky, whatever. Of course, Delia swears by parboiling. But John Turode says, whatever way you do it, put them under the lamb on a cake rack. So then the fat from the lamb will drip onto them and it's really absolutely make them really good. Yeah, so that's a great idea.
Mm.
Okay, so we'll compare this wine with another one, perhaps after a song. Anyway, we've just established that Lottie likes good white Burgundy, and the way she found that out was to ask her boyfriend on text, because she doesn't know.
It just gets handed to you in a glass, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. So.
But that's good. It does mean you've got good taste, because good white Burgundy is, of course, fine wine.
Oh, is it?
It depends how good it is.
Is it expensive?
Well, it depends how good it is. You get all price ranges, but it's an area of the world that is internationally famous. Yeah.
Right. Good. Yeah.
So we were looking at the La Matiniere Crow's Hermitage by Ferreton Perefis from the Cambridge Wine Merchants for $12.99. We're going to go on in a minute to one for $12.99 from Majestic Chateau Peyrabonne, which is a 2003 Medoc Cru Bourgeois, and so it's old. It's 10 years old. So the thing I want to say is next week we're going to be doing at Cambridgeshire Wine School a four-week course, 1 evening a week for 4 weeks, comparing French wines with New World wines blind. So we basically cover the bottles up. And I teach
not
you
the
about
people.
The yeah, there's not the people.
Right, okay.
You're blind people. Yeah, we don't blindfold you. We cover the bottles, and I tell you everything I can in a few moments for clues, key clues on the taste differences you are likely to expect, and then we see if we can judge it just by taste alone. It's surprisingly easy once you get the hang of it, and then that will really help you, of course. Know what to expect when you buy bottles more often, and less likely to be disappointed because you know what you're going for. So, but we're not going to compare with the New World today. We're comparing two French wines instead. So this is an old, 10 years old Bordeaux. And the thing about roast lamb for Easter is if you roast it, if it's really roasted, because of course you could serve lamb grilled or braised or Middle Eastern spicy recipe like one Nigella does in Feast. She's got a couple of Middle Eastern spice up that lamb for Passover, which is near Easter, isn't it? It's a bit similar. So if you roast it, Bordeaux. If you braise it, Rhone. That would be the basic sort of, you know. And if you grill it, go to southern France and get a wine from Languedoc, because it's kind of a sunshiny thing to do, to grill lamb. But that's probably too, I don't mean to sound like I'm making a harsh rule, but it's kind of it's not a rule, it's a bit of advice that is supposed to be.
So roast.
Works. Roast it with this, Bordeaux. So when you smell this, that's quite.
That smells more familiar.
Ah, more familiar, okay. This has got a blackcurranty, ripe blackcurranty flavour in the fruit. But that fruit's flavour has started to really go soft and caramelised. It's gone sweet because that's the ageing effect in the bottle, to caramelise the fruit. And it's also got some kind of what I call pencil shavings, which is it's been oaked, it's been matured in oak barrels, and it's come out as pencil shavings, which it often does in Bordeaux.
Can I ask a question about wines that are aged? And this might be a silly question, but when they make the wine like 10 years ago, did they always have the intention to make sure it wasn't going to be bought until 10 years later? They were going to age it. This isn't a wine that's been available for 10 years and they've had so much of it that the longer it goes on, the more it ages. They've always had the intention to let it age for that long.
Yes, there's an awful lot of Bordeaux that you buy young, it's released young, and you should drink it fairly young because it's not structured for aging.
Right.
But Bordeaux is famous for producing wines that actually, if you drink them young, they're going to be quite harsh.
Okay.
And the keeping the wine won't change the amount of acid that's in it. It'll all stay there. But what will happen is the reaction of the compounds in the wine with micro-oxygen getting in through the cork over years will change the flavour of the wine and the way the compounds in it react work together so that the fruit flavour will become softer and more mellow. And so the whole idea with a lot of Bordeaux is to leave it.
Yeah.
And then you get, and you think, well, why bother? Because you could go to a New World wine and it's all soft and mellow now. Yes, but it's in a different way.
Yeah.
There's a way that Bordeaux tastes that you just cannot compare.
And is 10 years about the sort of time you would anticipate something to be, or does it vary?
Top Bordeaux you could keep for much longer,
okay.
And it will stay fresher for longer. This is not top Bordeaux. It's only a Medoc appellation. It's not even like a Margaux or a Saint-Estèphe or a more precise village appellation. It's just general. It's a cru bourgeois. So it's outside the area of the very best gravel on the Médoc side, but they still get some very good wines from this area. So this wine at 10 years old is ready to drink now. You wouldn't keep it much longer.
Okay.
But it's got this lovely caramel blackcurrant fruit, isn't it? It's really... What are you finding, Lottie?
Yeah, pretty much those things.
Have you tasted it yet?
Yes, I have. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Have you tried it with beef?
No, I haven't. It's making me want cheese, though.
Ah, that's a really good point. Bordeaux works very well with cheddar, actually, whereas New World Cabernet probably wouldn't. The very fruitiness of it would be smothered by the cheese, but with Bordeaux being more savoury, it kind of works better with cheddar. So maybe it's worth trying with
a bit of beef.
I'll
try with some beef,
yes. Why not?
Because it is roast beef and roast for Bordeaux. Or Rhone still would work just quite nicely.
So these, so even though we're talking about lamb, these would go with roast beef and any other roast meats?
Yeah, there, I didn't bring along sliced lamb because the supermarket didn't sell it.
No.
but yes, lamb, beef. Once you get into pork, I'm starting to think more about Pinot Noir than I am about Bordeaux, Cabernet Sauvignon and that kind of thing. But you can do that. And... If you roast your chicken very strongly and make it really strong flavours, you could try it with a Bordeaux. It wouldn't be bad. The thing to do with food matching is not be too fussy.
Mm.
At the end of the day, if you don't like the wine that has been recommended then it's not going to work, is it? You're not going to enjoy it.
See, I wanted to... I don't know how you'd clear this up for me, really. But when you say you think you like something, then you go and you decide you suddenly don't like it. It's quite often, isn't it, the case that you'll try something, yes, you like it, and or someone recommends it to you, like you will, go and purchase it from the supermarket, from a wine shop, and it may be corked or something's happened to it in process that you wouldn't be able to tell unless you're an expert, and so you suddenly decide you hate it because it's not actually how it should taste, and you just sit there and throw it away without realising it's...
I think there's a lot of people go off fairly good wine because they've got a bad bottle. And they don't know, and they just think that is what the wine should taste like. And that's something that takes a long while to get right. I'm sure it still happens to me. But after a while, and the more you come to a wine tasting where you've got other people to compare with, then that's the great thing. You can compare notes, and somebody says, is this tasting the way it should? And after a while, that happens often enough for you to be able to think, I'm not quite sure this is tasting the way it is, the way it should. But even then, unless you are... I mean, some of the wine merchants in Cambridge are really good at this because they're tasting wine more frequently than I am. So I'd really rely on their input. But, you know, even then, it's often a guess for me. You know, I don't think it's tasting the way it should. So open another bottle and try, or just give up. Yeah, and a lot of people do give up.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I've sat there and drunk a glass of wine, and then once boyfriend, who's a wine expert, has taken a sip, he's kind of just takes it out of my hand and say, no, this is not how it's supposed to taste. We should not be having this.
Sometimes it's obvious. Corkedness, for example, can be subtle or it can be really obvious. And when it's really obvious, it's wet cardboard type aroma and the fruit's all gone, smothered by it. But when it's subtle... You can just mistake it for a savouriness in the wine or a slight bitterness that doesn't really take your fancy. And you know, if it's a great variety that you know shouldn't have that, then you've got a clue. But if it's a great variety you're less familiar with, then you can be thrown by it. So yeah, it's a bit sad, but there it is.
I've just realised I've got completely swept up in talking about wine and beef. It's 2 minutes past nine, isn't it? Wine and beef.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming in. So do your courses next week. How can people find out more information, get on them if they want to join one?
CambridgeshireWineSchool.com. There's a range of things. You can go for the single evening tastings in the left-hand menu or drop down and find the four-week course if you like the idea of that blind wine tasting thing. There's champagne courses up there too, food and wine matching things. So there's a range of different things.
Okay, we'll offer this as a podcast and there'll be details of the wines that you've tried today on there as well. So we'll do that. We'll go straight to the news, shall we?
Yes.
Let's do that. Thank you very much,
Mark.
Thank you.